Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Taos in Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive, and this is football season, but we're going to be talking about baseball because it was kind of a madhouse over the weekend. Cal Ripken 21-31 game, the West Coast trip for the Orioles, the Dodgers coming in, Shohei pitching on Friday. Last place, sure. Lots of reasons to watch if you're a hardcore Orioles fan, but certainly the 30th anniversary of the Cal Ripken night. Not the same kind of crowd, not the same kind of reverie. And then the no-hit bid. Alan McCallum has been my baseball insider correspondent, insider and outsider, all the way through back to 27 years of WNST. He attended the game on Saturday night. I did not. The start of football season for me probably just led me in the rain and just all of it was on TV. I felt like I wanted to watch it on TV and see it on TV. If I had a press credential, I'd have been down there, but I didn't because I wanted to interact with Messina and some of the other people. But you went down. Give me your Saturday night because I reached to you in advance of this really to talk about Davey Johnson because you covered Davey's teams. We covered Davey's teams together 30 years ago. So, what a weird Saturday that begat a weird Sunday night of football in Buffalo, Alan McCallum.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you, Nestor. I got to tell you, the first thing I would say is that 30 years goes by really, really quickly.
Like a song, right? Like we should write a song about how fast that happened, right?
It's unbelievable. I was there with my father 30 years ago, and my father has since passed, but it was something that I remember fondly. And my sister wasn't there, so I wanted to go down with her. We went down with a couple of friends. I pondered whether or not to buy the tickets because of the weather, the couple of days before, because it looked like it was going to rain throughout, and that just sounded like a bummer. But I was like, you know what? I'm looking at the probability. I think it's worth a shot. I think it'll be a good night.
Are you still a Birdland insider?
Do I still have a subscription?
Yes.
No, I do not need not
Okay,
anymore.
so I'm asking for this because you're one of those 13-game season ticket holders for 100 years with the plan. I thought this. I have run into in my circle people that you know, people. Howard Scherr was on the show a couple weeks ago and admitted he had over a grand left on his thing that he didn't use this year. That's use or lose. I'm thinking like Saturday night would be the night that you use it. If you have clients, if
Absolutely.
you have a grand left, if you have $280, whatever you gave them, gifted them, thinking this was going to be a good year, no Ravens game in advance. Sunday night, you didn't have to go to the game. Sunday night, it's in Buffalo. And I think these Sunday night games wear people out with drinking all day, eating all day, waiting all day, playing all day. That like Saturday night at the ballpark in the rain when it was on TV felt a little bit for me and my wife like we were going to sit at home and watch it. And I was committed to it. At 5:30, I had it on, right?
Absolutely.
So like I'm watching it all, and I thought it was I'm at the point now where Alan, I don't want to be disrespectful to Cal Ripken. I've been all over the world with Cal. I've interviewed him over the North Pole. I have that distinction. I've stood on the Great Wall of China with Cal Ripken and his first wife. You and I were locker room to locker room, city to city, New York to Cleveland to Boston to Detroit to Milwaukee to Toronto with Cal Ripken, right? Like, so I did all that. Cal's not a hero to me. Cal's a dude I know and I respect and I like him. I mean, and I actually watched the videos of you and me and Ray Bachman interviewing him 20 years ago when he went into I mean, it's all on YouTube. It's click away. Just put Nestor Allen and Cal Ripken and it all pops up and you can see how we treated Cal Ripken then and how we were treated on Saturday night as a media entity without press credentials. But I would say this, I don't, the hero worship part of it, I found to be like, Cal's got to be a little uncomfortable with this. And even he said, I wasn't really looking forward to this, but it's been more fun. Just seeing old friends, that would have been the fun part for me. Seeing Rafael Palmeiro would have been fun for me. But who, by the way, looks in better shape than he did when he. It's a long story. But to stand in judgment of all of it, they're trying to sell tickets. It was the 30th anniversary. It's a great idea to do it. I thought it was kind of clunky, from the Kevin Brown, just all of it on television. It felt a little like, now why are we here again? And what, where's the first wife and where's the daughter and where's Billy? And like people are asking all of this. And why is David Rubenstein on his phone when Cal Ripken's speaking? And where's everybody? I mean, it felt like, how many people were really there? 30,000 maybe?
Okay, so there's a lot there. Yeah, I would say, I mean, I think they described it as a sellout. It
It
was
was
not.
not a say. I mean, they, right off the bat, you're going down the Trumplandia of you're going to lie to my eyes and tell me what my eyes are. I should wash them because it's Cal and it has to be a sell. That doesn't have to be. I mean, like, I would have gone down. You know what I mean? I would have gone down. I didn't. And I felt like somebody else would take the seat. And I did all of that with Cal. I was there when it really happened.
Sure.
You know, so, and I've been there for the last 30 years of everything else that's happened too, that I've stood witness to. So there's, and that's the attrition part of it that really kind of makes me sad. You know, I want Cal to be a hero and like the place to be mobbed and all that. And I want it to be wonderful. But what happened in the baseball side wound up to make it top five all-time Camden Yards night, Alan. I mean, like, I know it's an instant classic and we're 12 hours removed because we're shooting this on Sunday, but like I looked at it, I woke up this morning, I think probably should have been there last night.
So there's a lot there. I would say, first of all, they've closed down the left field stands a lot unless it's a giveaway or they think it's a big thing, and those were open. I would say it was I think it was probably close to 40,
Okay.
maybe 38. It wasn't empty. I think the rain kept a lot of people away, that were like, let's go down late and we'll see how it is. But it was a good crowd for sure.
A
I
lot of
would say.
Dodgers fans too. I mean, it was a Saturday night. I mean, there were a million reasons to go, but I really thought like the Birdman membership thing would be like somebody would call me and say, "Dude, I got $1,200 on my thing. You want to go? Just come down. I'll buy
So,
drinks all night. I'll, you know what I mean? I feel that energy about the team, and I thought it was a night to pour your love into the team. It really was."
I was in the upper deck when I had 29 game plan with my sister and my dad. We sat in section 352, third base side, halfway up the upper deck. Those were great seats. I got 362 last night. So from our vantage point, we knew there were Dodgers fans, and you could see some of them, but. It was, but you could hear them. I could hear them more than I could see them. And it wasn't until I went home and actually watched the whole game back on replay, at home on TV, that you could see the huge number of Dodgers fans that were down on the lower deck on the third base side, and in other areas in the lower deck. And it's like, wow, I could hear them, but I didn't realize how dramatically different the seating bowl looks
Well, they
like
were
when you've got
witnessing
all of
their
your
team
white.
throw a no-hitter all night long.
It wasn't just them, Ness.
You were cheering for the no-hitter, I hope, right?
Let me get there. So we got, we get there, and I'll tell you, a lot of there were probably 35,000 people in the seating bowl at the time of the ceremonies, because a lot of people were still coming in. I think a lot of people got there late because of the weather. Traffic downtown was really complicated.
Oh, the cycling thing, right?
So I think a lot of people were still trying to get there when all of that was happening. We knew all we planned ahead. We got there about 20 minutes before it started. They delayed it for a few minutes, which was really good. We got there and got to see the whole thing. I was there 30 years ago in the stands, and it was electric and it was amazing. And I'm not gonna, from a cynical standpoint, I will tell you, yeah, some of it felt a little forced, a little schmaltzy, because they're trying to recreate all this stuff. And the
I said to
energy,
my wife early on, I'm like, this is a little hokey. A little hokey. A little hokey pokey.
but yeah, it's at that moment you ask yourself a question. Is it worth it to you to just give into it, to see these players, to see Harold Baines and Eddie Murray and Jim
That's
Palmer?
what made it special. I 100% agree with you, right?
Right. I remember these guys. I make the joke every time I see Harold Baines, I turn to somebody and I say, right now, today, if someone called Harold Baines and said, we need you to get us a base hit in Alaska, he'd get on a plane, fly for however many hours, land there, get in a van, drive to where the sled dogs were, get on the sled dog team, go for 3 hours, and it'll be 10 degrees below zero. He'd get
And
a bag
work
of
the
sand,
count to 3-1.
and he'd whistle a line drive into center field to win the game. Those things matter to me. And look, the vet that Cal drove around the ballpark in was sexy as all get out. And
Yeah, my wife's a Corvette person, so she loved that.
that's beautiful. And just, to see John Miller and to hear that voice in Camden. I mean, I hear him all the time, but to hear him in Camden Yards, waxing poetic about Cal, and then to see Cal, and you
Well,
mentioned.
John Miller waxed about Eddie just to get a cheer.
Absolutely. Look, you mentioned the time that we interviewed him, and I mean, to me, that is one of the great singular moments of my life, getting to interview Cal with just us in a room, right? But to hear, and it's during that period of time, not just with us, he talked about how he wanted to be in a situation after he retired and step away and think about, and at that point reflect on what happened and what his career was. And in that moment, he felt like it would be real. And that's this moment. And you could hear him towards the end of his brief speech break up a little
He
bit.
got emotional,
He
yeah.
did. And for me, whatever else you think about what happened, that was worth it.
I
Just
agree.
to hear Cal Ripken, in a moment in his life after his father and his mother have passed and his kids are grown, and he's in this ballpark, and whether it's sold out or not, there are 35,000 people staring down at him, shouting his name and leaning into a moment, and knowing that for all the things that he's been through, and those moments, he's on the back end of having those moments, and knowing that when they come again will be less than before. I think all those things play into how he perceives a moment, how we perceive a moment. They were making jokes at the end of the game on the show. 30 years from now, the 60th anniversary, we'll be talking about this game, and I was like, I doubt Cal's going to be here for his 60th, right? So, I mean, it's not impossible, but it seems unlikely.
Well,
So,
I don't know how many more runs around you're going to have, and Ryan throwing the pitch to him and all of that. I don't regrets. I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. I regret Saturday, but I will tell you this: watching the no-hitter, sitting here watching it, having my wife fall asleep after I fell asleep, when we were waking each other up, and me yelling into her, "The Orioles just won the game," and she yelled, "Cut the," and she came running in, and I'm watching, and I'm like, "Oh my God, this is like one of the top five all-time things I've ever seen in modern Oriole baseball since Camden Yards." Because Doug DeSensei's is a whole different level of like winning. I'm talking about since Angelo's bought the team, since the stadium was erected. I always joke about the Pope, McCartney, Billy Joel, Jimmy Buffett died. They canceled on him and Van Halen before they could actually play the stadium. But that stadium's Delmon Young, 21-31.
Mike Devereaux's catch in center field
Fair
and the
enough.
so let me break this down.
It's but the no-hitter, the no-mo no-hitter is a night that I wish I had been there. I'm
Sure.
thinking it's the statues night. There was a statue night that was a big night. The curse of the Andino night, I was there that night. So
Me
some
too.
nights,
Me too.
clinching nights. I've been there for clinching nights, and there's 22,000 people there, and it saddens me. The modern, it saddens me to see them honoring Ripken where it's far less influential and significant than it used to be. But it heartens me on a night when they almost get no hit. And wouldn't that have been something? We can write a book on the game Saturday night, Alan. And we haven't talked about that. And I called you about Davey Johnson. Alan McCallum is here. We're trying to talk baseball in a football season. I even said to my wife, like, after Buffalo and Lamar and Josh, I don't even know where the oxygen is in this city on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of this week for what happened on Saturday night. But like we got I called you about Davey Johnson, and then one of the greatest Orioles memories and evenings ever broke out. But let's go to the no-hitter a little bit. I mean, I haven't even talked to you about Basayo yet. I mean, like, my God.
So let me break this down for you. You asked me about my subscription plan. I gave up the 29 game plan a while ago. I work in DC. Life has gotten complicated. Sometimes it's easier to watch it on TV. I go when I can go. I will tell you that my history with the Orioles attendance the last couple of years has not been great. I've seen them lose a whole lot more than I've seen them win in the last two seasons, okay?
Including playoff games.
Well, yeah. Let me put it to you this way. I had seen them win one game this year before last night at home, and it was a game where they scored all the runs in the first inning. We walked in the second inning. They won the game. I never saw them score a run. Okay, I think I saw them get two hit, an infield hit, and a blooper to the outfield, and they won the game. But I never saw them do anything during
There have
that.
been a lot of nights the last two seasons where they just haven't hit the ball at all. And that's
I
going on.
went to Toronto last year. I was going to go see two games. The first game I was going to go to, Grayson Rodriguez was supposed to pitch. Grayson got pulled from scratched from the start. He hasn't thrown a pitch in the major leagues since then. Okay.
So it's your fault.
Well,
I want to remind everybody, I was sitting next to you when Jeffrey Mayer happened.
I'm aware. And then the only run they scored in the whole game was a Jackson Holliday home run. And I was like, I'm cursing this club. I was supposed to go to the next game, and I said to who I was with, like, we're not going tomorrow because I'm not going to see that. I can't see this again. And they won. We did something else fun. So cut to last night. Game starts. I'm with my sister. I'm with good friends. We're talking about everything that's happened. We're talking about life, other things. And, at some point I turned to my friend Sean. I'm like, this guy's dealing. Like, he's dealing. It was one of those moments when I remember when Mike Mussina was pitching for the Orioles. Those moments when he was going deep into the game and he wasn't throwing, he was throwing no hitters. And I'm talking to Mark Mussina. I'm talking to you, and you're talking about how I'm waxing poetic about the game. I'm
Well,
like, yeah,
you were at the Messina no-hitter game on the Friday night, right?
I
The
was
Indians
indeed.
game, yeah.
I was indeed. And you accused me of waxing poetic. I was like, it was one of the
Well, I did
greatest
the
things I've
show at
ever seen.
Hooters that night, and I had a date with Robin, my old girlfriend. We
Yeah.
sort of was a first date kind of thing, and we went across the harbor that night and had a dinner date. And I got up in the sixth inning, and Messina was throwing a. You never forget where you are when someone's throwing a no-hitter, especially when you've walked out of a no-hitter, as I have, and I have a ticket stub. And I did my show from Jack Murphy Stadium and left, and a no-hitter happened that night. So, like, like Tony Gwynn was part of it. He was in the lineup and went 0 for 4. So I like the no-hitter thing has haunted me forever. And the fact that this became a no-hitter, and Luke was texting me because our text services had a little bit of a 5 or 10 minute lag in it when we sent out the texts. And he's like, I'm afraid to do this and have it broken up. And I'm like, don't, it's Saturday night. If people are into the Orioles and into Cal Ripken, they're into it. And it was 10 o'clock Saturday night. Anyway, I
I
just
remember.
thought, I really thought it was going to happen, Alan. Like, you know
So,
what I mean? Like, I'm
yes,
watching it and I'm like, finally. I didn't know you were at the ballpark. I was like, finally, Luke is going to get his no, because he and I have had 20 years of friendship now and radio, and I can't wait to get him on. But you know what Luke's going to say? Yeah, I was there, but we got to talk about the Ravens, the Bills, the Josh Allen, the Lamar, and
yeah,
there's
I'm
going to be
not going
all
to do
that this
that.
week. I know you're not.
I'm not going to do it. Yeah, so
If
I
you are
remember
tuning
hearing.
in to hear Lamar and Josh and Bills, we got
I
to
am
talk
not.
about this. We got to talk about this game.
I remember Sandy Alomar hitting that line drive to break up Messina's no hitter. I've seen a lot of stuff, Nestor. I've seen a lot of it because of or with you. I haven't seen a World Series game in person, and I haven't seen no hitter. I have tickets. I have tickets to the Wilson Alvarez no hitter that I could not go to because I was at a wake for a
Dude,
family
my
member.
kid called me. My kid never invites me to do anything. And he invited me to go to the Hideo Nomo game that night. It was early in the year, it was in April. People around here still cared about baseball in a big way then. And Mike Peters of The Alarm was playing in the Wrecker Theater that night. And I had just sang on stage with him a couple of nights before. And I'm like, I love Mike Peters. I went to Mike Peters that night and I watched the no-hitter in the corner of the Wrecker Theater in the rec room on the television. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. My kid went to a no-hitter and I didn't. And then, of course, the next day, the Orioles took out an ad in the Sun selling ticket stubs to commemorate the big event for Red Sox. Like, li literally, people forget this stuff. I don't forget it. But the one thing I have never done, by the way, the day that David Cone threw the perfect game, Scotty P from Amici's, my lifer friend. And by the way, Amici's number three on the countdown for tastiness. So, you know, two and one are pretty damn good. If Amici's is
Absolutely.
only three, right? And so we were supposed to go see Springsteen at Brendan Byrne Arena that night. It might have been Giant Stadium. Don't quote me on that, but it was Springsteen and the E Street Band. And it might have been the stadium, but either way, it was summer, obviously, baseball. And it was like a Wednesday afternoon or Thursday afternoon. It was a day game. And Scotty P's like, hey, man, let's go up and see the Yankees in the afternoon. And then we'll go across the bridge and we'll go to Jersey. We'll see Bruce. Okay, I'm in. Night before, I got the kitchen and the meat. I didn't go. I missed a perfect game. So it has been a lifelong quest of mine. The no-hitter thing is a thing for me. And now all I want to have happen is for you to be at one. I'm committed that I walked out of my Bud Smith game in San Diego. It's never going to happen
Sure.
for me. So here's the weird thing about the game Saturday night that I want you to attest to is that the drunks that sit out in the bar and the girls that don't know anything about baseball and just like the color orange and people that are Cal Ripken worshiping and all of that and the rain and all of that, I'm assuming 99.9% of the people stayed. That no one went over to Pickles in the seventh inning, that no one walked out of a no-hitter. You know what I mean? I'm just assuming the whole bowl was down on it. Maybe I'm wrong because the way they shoot these games on TV, it's like
It's
Trump
hard to
shoots his
see.
presidency. Yeah, Trump shoots his presidency. Everything about it is Greg Bader homogenized. So
So,
everything is bigger, better, perfect, awesome, great. Yeah, Rob Long, Melanie Newman sits with Cal Ripken, like all of it. But to me, the no-hitter thing, I don't know if people we know how special it is or whether they're pissed about it's the Orioles and they're the home team's getting no hit, if they're that dumb to think that they're rooting against it. Like I don't know what the buzz is around baseball people in the upper deck for that sort of an event because it's so rare, scarce. It's like seeing the Northern Lights or something, man, you know?
The thing about a no-hitter is that you don't always understand until later in the game that it's happening, okay? But a lot of people were there because, all the stuff that happened, you're getting these other things that are going through the game. You don't know what they're gonna what kind of surprises there are for Cat involving Cal. So people were staying. And then by the time you get to the sixth or seventh inning, you're like I said, I'm like, this guy's dealing, Before, when with Mike Messina, I'm in the press box and you can see it right in front of you. We're in the upper deck. It's a different vantage point, but you could see how they were reacting to it, that he was throwing spectacularly well. And then you come home and you watch this ball dance all over the strike zone. It was really in and out of the strike zone. It was really incredible. To answer your question, there were a few people that left, but most of the people were there at the end. There was
And
a
then if you're there at the end, you're there at the end of the end, and then you
right.
stayed for the miracle, right?
So
So that's what I'm saying. Like, how many people could say, well, they made a comeback and they won a game they shouldn't have won, and it was Oriole magic, but I wanted to get to the Baja Beach Club or whatever is going on, right? I would think the staying for the no-hitter part really let, and you could feel the energy on TV of, oh my God, they might win. This guy can't throw a strike. You know what I mean? Like.
And that energy was real. Look, so we got to the eighth inning, and I turned. They went out so quickly in the eighth inning, and after the sixth inning, I'm looking at his pitch count on my phone, like, how far are they going to let this thing go? And
Because they are in a pennant race. They are in first place. They are going to need him
absolutely,
for game two in 3 weeks, right?
I think after the seventh, it was like 94, and by the eighth, it was like 100, and it was just past 100, and I was like, I think they're gonna let this guy do this. And I turned, I was like, I think we're about to see a no-hitter. I mean, at this point, I was like, and there was a moment of me where I went, I can't believe I'm going to see the Orioles get no hit. And then I went, I can't believe I'm not going to, I can't believe I'm
No,
going to
no,
see
no.
the
I
Orioles get
can't
no hit.
believe I'm going to see the Orioles get no hit on Cal Ripken anniversary night in front of everybody by the friggin' Dodgers that that Koufax and Drysdale and in front of Jim Palmer, in front of Eddie Murray who played for the like if
I'm thinking like I'm a jinx. I can't believe this is happening. And then I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. I think I'm going to see a no-hitter.
Of course this is going to happen tonight,
Oh my
right?
God.
Like
So we, and the Alex Jackson comes up three pitches. He's gone. And then Coby Mayo, to his credit, because I was like, oh, he's going to strike out 15 times in one swing. He put a good swing on the ball, and he just missed it. Mayo just missed it. And I was like, this is going to happen. And Jackson Holliday comes up. I think he fouled off one pitch. When he hit that ball, I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. And
Oh, I
at one
sat
point
up and I'm like, that's gone. I'm like, that's gone.
I thought for a second that the wind was gonna get it and the arc was gonna hold it in.
I
And
thought it was going to at least hit the wall. It was a hit.
I
The
thought
no hitter was over. The minute the ball hit the bat, nobody was catching that ball.
and it was, I mean, at that point it was incredible. All right, great. So they broke it up. And then at the point, like, oh great, well, I'm just gonna watch the Orioles lose a game. And there were a few people that did leave at that point. There were a few. Not a lot, but a few. So our friend Gail turns to us and says, they can win this game. And I turned to her and I said, I appreciate your optimism, Gail.
I
And then
left the Len Dykstra playoff game to honor Davey Johnson. I found my ticket stub. I literally found my ticket stub. I left the Len Dykstra game in '86 at Shea Stadium. I heard the home run on the freeway in traffic, and I was with a Mets fan. It did not
so
go well. So I remember these moments where you walk out, and if you're crossing Pratt Street and you're like, the Orioles did what? Like, my wife went back to bed after the no-hitter got broken up. She went to bed, and I'm screaming at her 20 minutes later. I'm like, they won.
So Jeremiah Jackson, who I love, by the way, I pray this kid is real because I love his approach at the plate. Smokes the double into the gap, and then everybody's hoping for Gunnar to hit a home run. Gunnar gets hit, and once both of them are on base, I'm looking at the situation. I'm like, okay, Mountie's had some pretty good at bats the last week. All right, he walks. And then the moment for me was Couser, and Couser, who they call the milkman, who I believe they should call the Swiss cheese man, because of the amount of holes in his swing. I'm like, he's either going to hit a home run or he's going to strike out. And he walks, and I'm like, oh my God, this guy can't find a plate. And you're thinking at this point, everybody in the bullpen at that point, they were all spectators. There was no mindset to come in this game. There was no mindset that they needed to help participate. They wanted to see a no-hitter like everybody else. And suddenly they're called into action and nobody is mentally ready.
In a pennant race game for them.
And but not only that, like they lost four in a row and they needed a win, but everybody became a spectator to Yamamoto's absolute gem, and they weren't ready. And when once Couser walks in the other run, I'm like, oh my God, this is real. So I texted Mark Messina after the game. I said, I watched two baseball games tonight. The first one lasted 8 2/3 innings. The second one lasted in the span of an out that never came. Both were incredible. I can't believe I saw this. Because Emmanuel Rivera comes up, and I turned to everybody and I was like, Emmanuel Rivera gets clutch hits, and he's gotten the biggest hits for them all week. I don't know what kind of player he's going to ultimately be, but both last year and this year, when he's come up, he's gotten big hits for them. And Tanner Scott comes in. That ball he hit was almost on the ground, Nestor. I mean, he hit that ball almost off the ground into center field. And the place was, by the time he got to the plate, the place was electric. The place was wild. And people, at that point, by the time he got to the plate, we believed he was going to win. Most of the people believed where they were going to win. I was like, they can win this game. And when he hit the line drop, there was a moment earlier when Jeremiah Jackson got the double and they pinch ran for him. And I was like, that run means nothing. What are you doing? And I understand that he's thinking, well, they're in, if they tie this game, they're going to pull him for a real outfielder anyway. Okay, fine. But I was like, they need to save the pinch runner for the winning run. And they did with Mateo. Good call. That ball gets hit in the center field. And you know at that point, they're going to win because Mateo's on second base. And as soon as the ball hits the grass, that they're going to win. But your
And the
brain,
throw is somewhere into Pigtown. I mean,
I'm telling you, your brain could not process that 20 minutes ago. They were about to be no hit, and that you're watching the runner that's going to win the game round third base. Like, I'm in a weird time dispersal thing in time and science fiction, and I'm seeing something that is not happening. This is not happening. And they won that game. I'm surprised I have a voice today because I was screaming. Everybody's jumping up down. Everybody but the Dodger fans that were behind
that's
us.
what I say. It was a top five Oriole Park moment ever, ever on Saturday
Don
night.
Gelman,
And it came out of dust,
it came out of
Oriole
nowhere.
magic.
I mean, it was. If you ever believe the idea of Oriole magic, it was there. It was there last night. Something happened that was not
Well,
of
if
this
I
earth.
get my press credential back rightfully next year and I go on to write, Orange Rain, I don't know. You come up with whatever it's going to be called. If there's an Oriole parade in the next 3 years, the beginning of the book would literally the book will start on the 30th anniversary of the disappointment of all of this, Holiday being a 1-1 and breaking it up, just all of it. I mean, just all of it was magical. Alan McCallum is here. So, Alan, at the end of the day, it was just one game, and we'll see what happens in the future. But I reached you about the Davey Johnson thing, and as it intertwines, I mean, what a day. Like, I mean, what a weekend with football starting and just all of it. Wake up on Saturday to Davey passing away, and I found out kind of early in the morning. I saw it on my timeline, and and I'm a journalist. Is this a hoax? And I'm like, he's 82. And I have so many things I want to say about Davey, which is why I reached to you way before no hitters and Yamamoto and Cal 21-31. And Mark Messina and I did an hour together last week. If you want to go check that out about 21-31, I'd love to talk to his brother. I'd like to talk to half of those guys in that line. I'm like, man, I'd love to talk to Ben McDonald for an hour about this stuff and be in there. I'd like to talk to Cal again if they let me, and his son just about this stuff because it was all very intimate to me and the Davey Johnson thing. And I told my wife some stories. And that's what led me to texting you on Saturday late in the morning and saying, hey, man, we got to talk about Davey Johnson a little bit. Because my wife was unfamiliar a little bit, kind of came into the movie a little later. These youngins might not. But I mean, I remember Davey's a player. I remember Davey wearing a black hat, 72, as an Oriole. I mean, there was my first Oriole team I remember, Redmond and, Wayne Garland and DeSensei was coming in for Brooks. And that era of Oriole baseball was very good. They were a good team, 73, 74, the trade for Earl Williams. And I will say this, Saturday's really a weird day, Alan. My wife said to me, the Bowery Antique over on Harford Road across from the barn, they're going out of business. And I had never walked in there in my life. It says antiques. I didn't think it had sports stuff. I went in there. They had baseball cards, football cards. I found skipjacks, scorecards from 1984. Like I
Wow.
found all, look, it was, I bought
Just
a,
buy
I,
it.
I bought a, I bought one thing. I bought a Sports Illustrated Joe Namath cover from 1970 for a dollar. I spent a
Wow.
dollar. But I touched Earl Williams' 1973. It was mint too. 1973 baseball card. And I turned it over. And I said to her, and this is on the day Davey Johnson dies. Crazy. And I was explaining this to her in the morning, and now I'm holding his baseball card in Parkville. And people around me are talking about the Orioles. And I went to the parade in 83. I'm hearing people, I didn't get recognized, which was fine because I was just trying to like look I was rummaging through stuff, lots of stuff, football cards, all sorts of stuff that's in my lane. And I held this Earl Williams card and I turned it over for my wife. He had like 28 home runs in 71, 23. Like he was like going to change the Orioles. It was a big deal that Davey got dealt out. And then Davey went on this path to managing the Mets, being a legend in New York. The Reds thing, the other jobs he's had, right? And but he came to Baltimore and I wrote Peter Principles. I hope everybody reads it. If you're this far in and you think I'm the jackass and Allen's the straight guy, and I've written chapters, spent days and weeks and months when my wife was battling cancer writing the Peter Principles for Adam Jones, because he asked me about an Oriole history. So I hope at some point Adam Jones reads it as well. But to understand how screwed up Peter Angelos was, how screwed up their management structure was, how Davey was going to take the job and they insulted Davey, and then Davey said F you, and they went another direction and they hired Phil Regan and it didn't work out well, and then Davey came back and then Davey and he didn't get along, and Davey loved me because I shat upon Angelos. I
Right.
told the truth. So Davey never really wanted to be nice to me. He was kind of a hard ass, smart ass kind of a guy. You were not in Fort Lauderdale. This is in
No.
1997. I'm doing my show live. So it was just a Ray Bachman would speak to this. ISDN line, SPID things, equipment issues. The phone company, 1997, there is no internet. We're using landlines. There's barely cell phones. So I'm in the lobby of the DoubleTree in Fort Lauderdale, and all the players are coming by. So, like, I think, just thinking of the era, Alomar, Surhoff, Rick Down, Scott Kamenicki. I'm just thinking of people that I have
Sure.
pictures, Alan Mills, Moose, like all these people are coming, Brady, there's people are coming by and doing the show. And Davey comes down during my show to go out to dinner to have a couple nips. They played an afternoon game or it was an off day or whatever it was. And he comes down and he sits 8 feet in front of me, puts his feet up, orders a Bud Light, and watches me do my show. And I invited him on to the show. He's like, "Nah, man, I got my own show. I got my own show on BAL. I'm just here to watch your show, man. I just want to hear what you got to say." So he's like watching Nasty Nestor do live radio, refusing to come on, but sitting there for 20 minutes, 30 minutes,
Wow.
watching me interview his coaches and laughing. He got a kick out of me. Davey always liked me.
Believe that. I believe
Davey and
that.
I, we played with my cousin, right? I mean, like big time. So he had the different kind of respect for the Aparicio thing, and he was always poking me and testing me. He was always a smart ass with me. But you know what I knew he liked me? Was the next year. The thing with Angelos, it needs to be read and not told. The fact how much they hated each other, the faxing back and forth, the blame, the you can't fire me, I quit. Like, unbelievable after winning 100 games 2 years in a row and going wide. Like, how there were 3.6 million people in the stadium, Cal Ripken's Cal. Like, it's just, you can't even explain it to people 30 years later how big the Orioles were, and
Yeah.
the Ravens were wearing Barney suits at this point. They just come to town, PSLs, Vinny Testaverde, list all of that. And Rosenthal's killing the Ravens every day, killing Angelos every day too. But Davey quits, has no job, and in the summer of 1998, the All-Star game was in Denver at Coors Field. Davey got a gig with Coors Light, wearing Coors Light swag, signing autographs and doing handshakes and pictures at a bar in Lodo from like 3 to 4 on workout day or whatever. And I'm there with Scott Wachter, who was one-time photographer for Cal Ripken, and I'm going and walking around Denver. Tom Kapp was with me too. And I said, "Davey Johnson's doing a meet and greet at this bar. I'm going over. I'm going over. I'm going to go over and talk to him and get some information." And I walked over to the bar, and Davey's sitting there alone. Nobody cares who Davey Johnson. Like, it wasn't that people in Denver didn't care about baseball so much. They were at the Beanie Babies, as I remembered it. Baseball was new in Denver at that point, so like it was just a thing. Davey's sitting there alone. Like, there was no line. There was might have been three people to get a pick, but like he had time to talk to me. It
Nobody
wasn't
knows
a
who he was, sure.
wham bam autograph get out of line thing.
Sure.
Davey just bought me a beer. and sat there for a half an hour and bled my ears about Angelos, about everything that happened, about all of it, with a smile on his face. And then I saw him again. He managed the Nationals for years. Like, and I never went down there for that. But I saw him the last time in life. I saw him at Dodger Stadium managing the World Baseball Classic team. Brian Roberts was on that team. Jeremy Guthrie was on that team. I saw Daisuke K pitch for the Japanese and Ichiro. And at that point, Dennis Mannion was the president of the Dodgers and got me tickets behind home plate. I mean, I was at the game sitting next to Larry King, sitting next to Alyssa Milano. Like, it was an unbelievable experience that was afforded to me that night because I was in LA for the owners' meetings. This is when Bisciotti came up and threatened me about talking to his coaches. This was literally that trip. It was the
Wow.
owners' meetings were in LA, Dana Point. Unbelievable. And the next night, the World Baseball Classic was happening because it was in March. And I'm like, I want to go up to Dodger Stadium. So Jen and I went up and I had press pass. I was on the field. So I went on the field, interviewed Brian Roberts. You can go to YouTube and watch it all. But my last entree with Davey was on the field talking about how much he loved Baltimore and how much his kids were born here. And he just had this smile about him. And I snapshotted that when he passed on Saturday. And I wanted to remember Davey in some way because it, Alan, it's been 30 years for Ripken and 21-31. Davey was only here a minute, right? Davey was managed a
Absolutely.
team for 2 years and was such an integral, huge, huge part of everything that was right and everything that ever went wrong about the Orioles. You know what I mean?
So,
Like
yeah.
about how effed up Peter Giangelos was.
So, you mentioned Peter Angelos, and for me, like last night when John Miller was speaking at the ceremony, and my friend Gail was said, listen to that voice. And I was like, yeah. And he isn't here because Peter Angelos ditched him for whatever reason. For all the things, that might be the thing the most I'll never forgive Peter Angelos.
John Miller sat in my studio and cried. He sobbed
I
live on my
remember.
radio.
I remember. So, I mean, you probably have better one-on-ones with Davey than I did because, he was always hesitant. And
I never did a
on game day,
one-on-one with
like
Davey Johnson in my life, other than the 2 minutes and 14 seconds that are on YouTube from Dodger Stadium in 2000 and whenever 9, 10, whenever that was. Like that literally is the only one-on-one I ever had with Davey. I've just poured my soul in. I have one more Davey Johnson story that I will tell you that involves the 1986 National League Championship Series and John Steadman. Don't let me forget to tell it because I want to tell it because it's really kind of cool and special. But like, the Davey things where you covered those teams. You were my guy during those
So
2 years.
my first foray with you was the week before 21-31. And I went down to do that. But I didn't start covering the team officially until 1996. So Davey was the manager. And, the first couple of months, you're feeling your way around this thing, who I can talk to, when I should speak, when these things can happen. And like they knew who I was. They knew I was there for you. And you have a rep, right? So people are
I
always
had
sort
a
of,
really good rep with the team at that point. They all liked me.
yeah, but people are a little cautious because they know that you'll say things that other people won't say. But
Oh, the truth, you mean? I don't make
that's
anything
it,
up.
sure.
I haven't made
So
anything up, so yeah.
no, and that's not what I'm saying. So Davey didn't really, I knew I was never going to get him on the air, okay? But Davey, here's what I know about Davey. He was whip smart. He was street smart. He was sarcastic as all get out. He
Funny.
suffered no fools. He wanted nothing to do with the stupid questions when they come. And he you could always see he was a prototypical manager, meaning he had ideas. The thing about analytics, it's not that these ideas didn't exist before. They have just been quantified in ways that you can put into a math equation, okay? But there are people like OPS. Are you actually telling me that people didn't it didn't occur to them that Doubles plus home runs plus getting on plus walks means you get on base a lot and do things with it. I mean, Davey Johnson was one of those guys that you knew those kinds of things were percolating in his head. And he didn't necessarily share all that with you, but you could see that. I've seen managers who I wasn't really sure what their thought process was, okay? But Davey's not one of those
He was
guys.
a
You all
master strategist
He was a master strategist. But
and
he was.
manipulator and massager and, but I never felt like he was dishonest. I always felt like Davey was straight up.
No, that's not what I'm saying. He played his cards close to the vest. I knew that he was not somebody you wanted to have. You did not want him to be pissed at you because I was pretty sure there was a serious temper in there somewhere. And I also knew that, he could kick back and have a good time with his boys. I was born in 72, so I don't remember him as a player. But I what I remember him
I
as
just remember
is
how bad the trade was in regard to Earl
sure.
Williams and in regard to like what Earl they the Orioles thought they were getting in Earl Williams for this in this five player deal that they didn't
Sure.
get. And I said to my wife, Davey went off and played with Hank Aaron. Davey was on the field when Hank Aaron hit the home run. You know what I mean?
He hit
Like,
bombs.
so yeah. So I mean, Davey just had these lives in baseball
They
that
hit the
goes back to
middle of the lineup with
66
Hank
in the
Aaron.
Orioles. Talk about doing this against the Dodgers on an Orioles. Davey Johnson was a member of the Orioles in 66. You know, like, so there's so many things he touched that he's a larger than life piece of Oriole history that was a blink of the eye because he's famous for being a Met.
And it's important to say this. As veteran as those teams in 96 and 97 were, Ripken and Surhoff and Palmeiro,
Key,
Bonilla, Eric Davis,
Wells.
a whole lot of guys that were veterans and played the game. Davey when it was the glue. He was a guy that could go to Cal and say no. He was a guy that could go to Cal and say no. And there were times in and around this team that you got the sense that people were might have been afraid to say no to Cal, or sort of
Cal
have
stayed in
Rick.
his own hotel. Cal made his own rules. Cal, I mean, there are plenty of people who played with Cal that thought of Cal as selfish and didn't say it out loud. There were plenty of people that revered Cal. So, like, and it went along lines of sometimes race, sometimes culture, sometimes, hey, we're on a team, we're all going to do this together. Like, so there, and Cal spoke to this eloquently, I thought, with
Yes.
Melanie Newman on Saturday night on television, which was like, hey, the streak was controversial because no one had done it and nobody really thought it was all that great of an idea. And now, in modern terms, load management and innings, you already talked about Yamamoto throwing a no-hitter and they were going to pull him. So, like, the game and the world has changed a lot. So, Cal. You know, Cal understands it. I don't think Cal would play Cal every minute of every day and every inning if Cal were the manager of Cal, because Cal probably knows better than anybody that the streak was nice and all the flowers that come with it, but he probably would have hit for a better average if he'd have played 152 instead of 162, especially after he was 30. And that's just human nature of knowing how old guys' bodies work now that I'm one
So
of them.
I'm a person who both reveres Cal, and I also understand that Cal was human and not and as a result not perfect. Yeah, there were a lot
Cal
of people
was
that,
had an ego. Cal did, you know, Cal,
of course, he
I never
did.
thought of Cal as arrogant. I mean, I'm a pro Cal guy for the most part. I'm just not a hero worship guy. But I'm a fan of his greatness and I'm a fan of what a good person he's been through his life. But I can cut that aside from putting a Superman cape on him. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And it's important to understand,
And he can do
whatever
that for
he's.
himself, that thankfully, that when you know Cal, he doesn't speak. It's not like being around Cam Newton where he's in the third person. You know what I mean? Cal's a good guy. I mean, the autograph thing will never be done. And we haven't even mentioned that. Of all the extraordinary things Cal Ripken ever did, hanging
Sign
out and
more
meeting every
autographs
fan
than
every night, hey, nobody's ever done that.
sign more autographs than probably any human being in the history of the world. Look, whatever you think about Cal, staying in other places, for all the people that resented that, I will argue that Cal saved a lot of people a lot of grief because if he had stayed with the team in those places, it would have bombarded everybody and made things more complicated. That we could debate that forever. The point is that Cal, for whatever he was, and you're right, this whatever you think about streak, it will never be broken because no one will ever allow a player to get that far into it again. Load management, don't want to deal with it, whatever.
And
No,
that'll
no.
happen, and not because managers have strength like Davey did or like Earl did or whatever, but it'll happen just because they'll see the player as an investment that they don't want to run into the ground. See Matt Wieters and Buck Showalter, right? Like, just in a
Right.
general sense, these guys are valuable property, you know, and the pitching thing speaks to the way they manage innings and load management. So yeah, I mean, look, all of it's extraordinary. I don't doubt that. But to your point, Davey Johnson's a guy that could have sacked Cal at some point and gotten away with it, especially because Davey came after the streak was over. I mean, it was in progress, but it was like, if Davey'd say, Cal, you haven't had a hit in 2 weeks, you know, take a day off and just end this thing. And there was pressure to do that. At that point, Cal was pretty rock-headed, though. I mean, by that point, he'd already broken it, and it was
Well,
like Cal owned the streak. It wasn't the other way around. It
yeah.
really wasn't. Like, if anybody portrays it that way, they weren't in the locker room the way you and I were. I mean, really. I mean, I'm not
Yeah.
being a sports talk perfectionist or revisionist here. The truth is, Davey could have sat Cal because he had that power that Bill Regan didn't have. You know what I mean? The juice to be able
Absolutely.
to do that.
Look, Davey, my point was that Davey had the gravitas and the presence that he could go up to somebody and say no, and that's important. And yeah, I'm not sure Tony Mancelino is a guy that has that juice at this point. When you get to that point, if you're Cal Ripken, I think you've earned that right to say it. I mean, you've gotten that
You
far,
know, it
but
played out exactly the way it was supposed to play out, and the
yeah.
Davey Johnson thing is still a real pressure point. And on Saturday night, to see the empty seats for Cal Ripken night, to see them almost get no hit, to see the miracle that happened, the thing for me that struck me was Eddie Murray, Rafael Palmeiro, Mike Mussina, the history and the legacy of all of that for Ripken, and how it hasn't been done since 1983. And seeing that John Miller was thrown out, that like th there to me, the Davey Johnson thing will always be unfinished business, and will always tarnish the Angelos thing to say, like, that's really Miller was part one. And
Yeah.
when he walked out on the field Saturday, I said to my wife, this city loves John Miller, like loves John Miller in a way that they
Adores.
might love John Miller as much as they love Cal Ripken. So
No
like,
question.
and so I said, he's going to really get cheered. I told my wife, I'm like, he is beloved here. And it, when I watched him walk out, I'm like, these are the flowers he never got here, because he was just shat upon and thrown out of here in 1996 and 97, 30 years ago. For him to live long enough to come back with 3 rings from the Giants, Hall of Fame, Ford Frick, and all that, to walk on the field, it filled my heart for John Miller to give his life to this game.
I won't tell you he's the best that ever did it, but I'll tell you he's on the Mount Rushmore with the ones with whoever is.
So, I mean, the night had its thing, but Davey died that day, and I keep thinking, all these guys touch Davey, every single one of them.
So, Davey, what I was trying to get to was that if for all the veterans that were on those teams, they wouldn't have gone wire to wire in 97 if Davey Johnson wasn't the manager. He knew how to make that team go. He knew how to play that instrument.
It was no accident, it all fell apart the next year.
It was certainly not. Now I did not know when you texted me, I did not know he had passed. So when your text came in, my thought was, why does he want to talk to me about Dave Johnson? And then I
Oh.
found out a short time later. So it was a completely different. You actually alerted me to the reality that Davey passed away. It's been a good minute, and I hadn't really thought about him in a while. But I spent a lot, in those hours before we went to the game, I spent thinking about just the moments that we spent with him. I remember with Jeffrey Mayer, right? And hearing him speak after that game, just the sense of sort of it was the one that game after that game was the one time that I saw Davey Johnson look like I don't really know what just happened here, but we got screwed. I mean, he had this look on his face like I can't Of all the things that would happen, I can't really believe that that happened. And I think everybody sort of had a sense in that moment that that was something that was going to impact this club for the rest of the year, you know, or for the rest of the playoff run. Davey Johnson was a great manager, a great baseball man, and he will be missed
Last
deeply.
story for you, because you and I can, we got to get to some football around here, because, the Ravens played Sunday.
I want to talk to you about the style in the club a little bit before we go.
All right, well, my
I mean,
last Davey Johnson piece, because I was telling my wife Davey Johnson stories. 1986, I'm working at the Evening Sun, and the News American had just folded. The News American folded in like May of 86. And so October of 86, John Steadman had come over to the Evening Sun, and John was still, this 15 years of life he still had left in him. He was still the columnist, venerable, above the fold at the Evening Sun now. So we brought him on with Henneman. Rosenthal had just gotten hired. We were pretty good, I was make sure that scoreboard page was always tight with all the agate. John came back. And I could look this date up, October something near my birthday in 1986. So I'm 17 years old. John and I had a relationship that was great even by 2 years in. John loved me. This is one of the stories of Stedman and I, our love affair. Stedman comes in to the Evening Sun newsroom in his coat from the train station. Senor, I brought you something tonight. So what'd you bring me, John? Holds up a baseball, pulls a baseball out of his bag. National League baseball, black ink on it. The American Leagues had baby blue. I don't know who the National League president was then, but Chub Feeney, whoever the hell it was. Autograph on it. And there's scuff marks on the side of the baseball. And Steady brings it in to show it to Jack Gibbons, who was our sports editor. Mike Marlowe, Bob Nussgart were there. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. It's late at night. Steady's in. He'd just gotten off the train. It might have been 3 in the morning, honestly. It might have been like in the middle of the night. And Steady gives me the baseball and he says, Davey Johnson gave me this ball. And I'm like, okay. He said, I want you to see something, senor. You see this ball here? Davey had a bag of them. Mike Scott scuffing baseballs. After the game, Davey brings me in, shows me a bag of balls they've confiscated, they're going to give to the league office. Gave me one of the balls. Because John was a journalist. John was going to
Yeah.
write about this. Davey was complaining that Mike Scott, in the same series, when they wore those weird Astros jerseys with the white in the 86 playoffs, Nolan Ryan, right? All of that. I
Sure.
mean, the Mets beat them and won the World Series, right? But this is literally the 86 playoffs. They're playing the Astros and Nolan Ryan, the whole deal. And I still have that baseball. Stedman did a column because of his relationship with Davey Johnson, knowing Davey from 66, 67, 68. He's the veteran that when. And Davey's like, New York writers won't write about this. I'm going to give it to you, Steady. And I got the baseball, and I'd love to find that column that Stedman wrote about Mike Scott scuffing baseballs. Tell you what, Mike Scott's career never was the same ever again after that. Go look. I think he was 19-3 in 1986, and I probably never won double digits again. I don't have the stats in front of me, but there's a Steady story linked to Davey Johnson, linked to the 86 playoffs.
Wow.
And then the following week, of course, I got World Series tickets and I went up and I walked out of game three when Dykstra hit the home run. So I'm sorry. It was that, no, the Dykstra home run was that week against the Astros. It was an NLCS game. So
Okay.
nonetheless, that's what a baseball fan I was that at that time of my life. But Davey Johnson, man, like recurring figure in my life. Sam Basayo, go ahead, the Mr. Rubenstein. By the way, I'm gonna give you some inside poker. I haven't said this out loud. Arrighetti's the guy you need to keep your eye on.
All right.
Yeah. He was down in the dugout doing the whole thing. Arrighetti's involved. More so than Rubenstein, but nonetheless, that's what my sources tell me.
I will pay attention. Look, I'd love to do a post-mortem on the season with you so that we can go in depth because I have a lot to
I'm
say
gonna have a
about this.
crab cake. I won't give you any cheese.
I have a lot to say about this club. It's been a really interesting year. for a lot of the season, you've heard, oh, whatever you think about Mike Elias, he won't sign any of these guys. Most of these guys are being managed or being represented by Scott Boras, and nobody signs early with Scott Boras. So to have that continue to have this conversation is a little ludicrous. Why would Gunnar Henderson sign with the Orioles when he's going to make a crap ton of money when he becomes a free agent? So we'll see.
And
The sad
what would
is
you
not.
love about being here playing in last place for an owner that makes bobbleheads of himself and they can't sell out an Adam Jones hero night? They can't even sell out a Cal Ripken hero night. Like, why would you want to be stuck here, as Aubrey Huff once said, if you get the op? They need to make this great, Alan. Like, I keep writing about this. I did an hour last week with Marty Conway about the business of the team. They need to make it great. Whatever Saturday night was, that magic elixir, those people need to now come back and be engrossed in whatever. And but there are you're already there. The people that are in. It's not about you or me or Hispanic and black or old and older. It's now about, like, who are their customers? Who's Katie Griggs trying to get to, and how is she going to reach them by giving people like me a middle finger? I haven't figured it out. I really, like, these people are curious to me. I mean, I met Eric Garrett Getty last year, and he could not have been a bigger jerk to me. And he didn't even know who I was. He just, like, had an arrogance that said, well, I'm never going to shake his hand again. That guy's not even like a real dude. Like, that's my impression of him. And a year and a half into this, they've done everything really poorly, Alan. You know, I mean, signing Bisaccia, if that gets him a headline and makes him feel good, great. But I don't know if he can play. And if he can play, great, it's a great deal. And if he can't, as Luke and I pointed out, it's only $80 million. They wasted more than that on Tyler O'Neill.
Signing Sam Bisaccia is significant for a couple of reasons. One, because they do sign one of their young players, people who is highly touted. You're right. He's got a big swing, he's got a big body. If he's gonna catch at all, it's gonna put wear and tear on
My
it.
God, I just mentioned Earl Williams. Go look at his baseball card, Alan. That's all I'm going to tell you, you know?
There's a lot to manage there. We'll see what his career is. But it's significant, one, because they signed one of their guys. But maybe more importantly than that, Sam Bisaccia is a person of color in Baltimore. And whatever you think about the Baltimore Orioles as they exist right now, there aren't a lot of people of color,
In their
particularly
press
since.
box either, by the way, as I point out, being
Sure.
the Hispanic and the African American here speaking. So
A
yes.
absolutely. But in terms of position players in a city that, it's people love Adam Jones. It was great that Adam Jones was the leader of that era of the Orioles. And for as badly as Cedric Mullins stunk it up the last couple of years of his career after having a just a breakout season a few years ago, there are people that were upset and genuinely clamored for him to be re-signed, which makes no sense because he's not a full-time player anymore. Because it's not stated, it's not said, but it is important to this community to have someone that looks like the community on that field. And I think that's something important. So I think that the Orioles need to lean into Sam Bisaccia. I think they need to take care of his career. They need to take care of, you want to talk about load management, you want to talk about, what is the best path to keep him as an impact bat, to nurture his career, nurture his development,
To
all
me, they
those things.
sign him as a first baseman or whatever. They don't really think he's a catcher. I don't think they. I don't think they. They don't think he's a long term. By the time he's got the $30 million into the baked into this deal, he won't be a catcher. I don't think.
Well, look, so they've, I mean, we don't know about Kobe Mayo. Ryan Mountcastle has been frankly, a significant bust for this club. If Sam Bisaccia's
They got a
career is a
lot of
first.
guys on the road to bust, dude. I mean, Kerstad, Mayo, Kowser to some degree. I mean, I don't. Obviously, Rutschman. Let's start. I mean, like, this is the big picture of why we probably should spend more time together and do this later.
I want to have a postmortem with you. I've got a lot to say. I've from the time we got together with Luke towards the around the All-Star game, it's been a really interesting. This team is very Jekyll and Hyde. There's a lot of thoughts, but yeah, Sam Bisaio's career is what happens with him will be important, and nurturing that this career for him, I think, is something that the Orioles, if they're smart, will do
And nobody can bitch
wisely.
anymore that they didn't sign a guy. They did.
Yeah,
And as
absolutely.
I pointed out, and I'll throw myself on the sword here, I would have been the guy giving Mullins money after the 30-30. I would have been the guy giving Jonathan Scope money. Jonathan Scope's the greatest example for me of like, I would have signed that guy. I would have given him 4 years and $80 million and said, you're my second base. Because I believed they didn't. They won the battle on that, right? Trevor Rogers, Michael Elias believed even when you didn't and I didn't and nobody did, and Stowers was hitting home. So, I mean, now he's going to be the opening day starter next year. You hope. You hope, right? So, hey, look, man, I love you. I love baseball. I love what happened Saturday night. I'm sorry I wasn't there. I would have been a lot more sorry if the no-hitter would have happened. That would have been the poetic. So at least I didn't miss a no-hitter, but I didn't miss anything. I watched it, and it was great. And, yeah, I mean, it.
You miss the energy of the community. Being in a moment in this season in particular and watching the fans lose their minds, being a part of the fans who are losing their minds was something that I needed and didn't
Okay,
realize that I
good,
needed,
good.
and something that was really special in the city of Baltimore on a night when, we were waxing poetic about our bygone heroes of another day.
I'm going to quote you on whatever you just said that was very poignant about. I was there. I lost my mind. I needed to lose my mind, and it felt good to lose my mind. And it's been too long since I lost my mind. Is that close to? Is that paraphrasing?
That's relatively accurate, yes.
All right, Alan McCallum, I love him. You love him. He was our longtime Oriole insider. As two people of color doing sports, doing baseball talk here. You know what I mean? A Venezuelan and an African American doing baseball talk in Baltimore for a last place team after Lamar and Josh did the MVP thing on Sunday night. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour next week on Tuesday at the Beaumont in Catonsville. My wife and I had a big debate and discussion, and quite frankly, a disagreement about how the lamb chops should have been on the list and higher up. So we will have lamb chops next Tuesday at the Beaumont. And I'm also going to get the fried lobster tail because I thought it was worthy of my tastiness treats. Tastiness is winding down this week. I've already had a spoiler alert that Amici's is number three. They'll be upset about that, but the people that are number two and number one won't be because they're really good too. And matter of fact, the number two were told to me by the people at number three, and the number one is number one because it's the greatest thing on earth, and I had it for breakfast this morning. I'm Nestor. He's Alan. We are WNST AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, mixing in a little baseball and a sea of football. Give me back my press pass, Katie. We're Baltimore positive. See you soon.